Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Thursday, March 14th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
A few hundred people have signed on to a petition from one of several former female employees of the Clinton County Jail. They filed federal lawsuits alleging harassment at the jail.
Yes, they're inmates, but at the same time, they're still people, and they don't deserve to live in fear. And for however long they're incarcerated, the jail is their home.
Some state lawmakers want to prevent insurance companies from managing home health care, saying it's too expensive. Meanwhile, home health aides want to ensure older adults still get quality care.
And we'll check in with the founder of the North Country's Baseball League that aims to train underdog players from outside of big areas like Miami and Texas.
But if you get into the north, you know, unless you have a really, really, really standout player, it's really difficult for scouting to find out that the players are there and they're good. So we're kind of there to kind of open that door for those guys.
All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Gray and Gray and Associates CPAs, an accounting and financial services firm in Northern New York with offices in Canton, Potsdam, and Spring Hill, Florida. GrayCPAS.com and AdirondackExplorer.com and AdirondackAlmanac.com, presenting daily updated news on public policy, environmental issues, and local communities in the Adirondack Park.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Our first story deals with allegations of sexual harassment and assault. It's about 8 minutes long. Almost 600 people have signed a petition calling on Clinton County Sheriff David Favreau to resign. The petition was started by one of several former female employees who filed lawsuits alleging sexual harassment, discrimination, and retaliation at the jail. Clinton County recently settled with four of them. The women behind the suits continue to push for change at the jail, which Sheriff Favreau says is safe for both employees and inmates. Kara Chapman reports.
Michaela Sutterd always wanted a career in law enforcement. She says when she was hired as a correction officer at the Clinton County Jail in 2019, she was ecstatic.
Law enforcement was always something that I wanted to do. And literally within the first 2 weeks of me being there, I had three different female officers warn me about three different male officers. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. Every year got worse and worse.
Sutterd says one male CO was known for putting his crotch in the female CO's faces and rubbing up against them. She says the male officer's behavior ranged from making inappropriate comments to trying to force the female COs to hug them in front of inmates. Sutterd says everyone jokes around their friends, but this treatment wasn't like that.
It's not joking when I have a coworker saying he wants to rape me in the parking lot.
Sutterd and three other women made these and other claims in federal lawsuits. Sutterd says she initially planned to just deal with it. This job was an entryway into the career she'd always wanted. But she says she hit a breaking point when she learned about how one male CO was treating a female inmate. She says he was making advances that made the woman fearful of him. And Sutterd wasn't okay with that.
Yes, they're inmates, but at the same time, they're still people, and they don't deserve to live in fear. And for however long they're incarcerated, the jail is their home.
Sutterd says she and other female COs went to the county's personnel department with their sexual harassment allegations in March 2021. The Clinton County Legislature said in a statement that the county takes all complaints about harassment and discrimination in the workplace seriously. Sheriff David Favreau says an investigation focused on the behavior of three male officers.
And one of them is no longer employed with the county. He terminated his employment before I could terminate it.
Favreau says the personnel department put out a report, which hasn't been made public, on claims against the other two.
The actual stuff that was founded were comments that were made, actions that were done on a particular shift, And it was a fairly young shift. There were some personal relationships between the officers on that particular shift.
Favreau says he put more senior staff on that shift, the idea being that they have more experience and can guide younger officers. As for the COs who were investigated, Favreau says they received harsher punishments than the personnel department recommended. The way the sheriff sees it, the process worked, and his office did everything it could do.
Harassment is an awful thing in any workplace. It impacts productivity, but it doesn't require termination of everybody that's involved and in every single case. And I think that's the difficult thing for some people to grasp. They just think, well, people should be fired for harassment.
But Sutterd and the other female COs say that process didn't work and the problems haven't gone away. According to court documents, the male COs were suspended for a month. And when they came back, they and other jail employees allegedly retaliated. The women say an undersheriff discouraged further complaints and forbade them from talking about the investigation. They say male officers would undermine them in front of inmates. Sutterd says two male COs failed to intervene properly when an inmate climbed on top of her when she and other officers tried to break up a fight. Sutterd says when you sign up for a job like that, the possibility of not coming home is always in the back of your mind.
But that one incident really just kind of stuck with me for the rest of my time there, and it made it more realistic to me than what it had been before.
Five women, including Sutterd, resigned from the jail in the 2 years following the March 2021 investigation. County Administrator Michael Zerlo said in an email that the personnel department has since received one complaint from a jail employee involved in that original probe. He said, quote, "The complaint was fully investigated and resulted in no findings." Favreau says he hasn't received any complaints since the investigation. But Sutterd claims the same male COs continue to mistreat employees and inmates at the jail. And that's why she hasn't gone quiet about her own experience.
They haven't learned their lesson. They're still doing it because in their minds, they got away with it. Because they're still there and none of us are.
Sutterd says Sheriff Favreau, as the leader of the jail, is to blame for all the issues there. That's why she started a petition calling for his resignation at the end of January. So far, more than 580 people have signed it. At a public meeting last month, Sutterd told county legislators about the petition and asked them to take a stand.
Ask yourselves, if your wife started a job at the jail and came home in tears one day because her coworker threatened to rape her in the parking lot, would you be okay with it? If your mother wound up in jail over failing to appear and she called you to tell you an officer was forcibly touching her in the closet, would you keep allowing it to happen?
The legislature took no action on the petition. Sutterd and three others filed federal civil rights lawsuits last year. In addition to the alleged sexual harassment and retaliation, they say they were denied training opportunities and dealt with discriminatory policies. The four women settled with the county in December. County Administrator Zerlo says the county's contribution to the settlements was $50,000. The total amount of the settlements and any other terms aside from payment have not been made public. One of the other plaintiffs, Hannah Sorrell, says she's not happy with how her case ended.
I feel like it should have went to trial, but most people don't understand that trial is really expensive.
That's why the county settled too. The county legislature says it wanted to avoid the cost of drawn-out litigation, even though it believed there were valid defenses to the claims. But the issue of workplace misconduct at the jail is not over yet. The Albany Times Union reports that the state attorney general's office is investigating the jail and spoke with all four women who settled. The AG's office did not return a request for comment, but Favreau confirmed the probe and says his office has provided documentation. Sorrell says she has a lot of faith in the AG's office.
I really hope that the attorney general takes this seriously and we get justice.
Three other sexual misconduct lawsuits involving the jail are making their way through the courts. One was filed by a fifth woman who says she also experienced sexual harassment and discrimination while employed there. Court documents say her case is set to go to trial next year. The other two were filed by former inmates under the Adult Survivors Act last fall. The women say they were sexually abused by a CO and an instructor, who Favreau says was not an employee of the jail. Anna Kull of the New York-based firm Levy Konigsberg is the former inmate's attorney. She says their abuse, combined with the former employee's allegations, shows there's a systemic issue at the facility.
You just don't have a pattern of sexual misconduct, whether it's harassment of an employee or sexual abuse of an inmate. You don't have that pattern without a culture that tolerates it, without a system that fails to prevent it time and time again.
Favreau says his office has prepared its defense for those cases. County attorneys have requested their dismissal. As for Sutter's petition, Favreau says he has no plans to resign. He points to how he was overwhelmingly reelected to a sixth term in 2022.
We've had a lot of successes. We've worked hard and we have a great workforce right now. I'm not leaving it.
Suddert says what keeps her going, even after leaving the jail, is the desire to make sure the inmates and employees there are safe. Favreau says they already are. Kara Chapman, North Country Public Radio, Plattsburgh.
You're listening to Northern Lights here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:11. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, we'll check in with the head of the North Country's Empire Baseball League as players get ready during spring training. That conversation coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Dan Duggan out of Lake Clear. Partly cloudy skies on this March 14th, Pi Day. Highs in the 50s today, light winds out of the west. Maybe some showers tonight and good chance of light rain tomorrow with highs upper 40s, low 50s. Northern Light is supported by Cronin's Golf Resort, a regional destination for golf, dining, lodging in the Southern Adirondacks. Details at Cronin's Golf Resort.
More details and reaction are emerging regarding a Netflix documentary about a former boarding school in Ogdensburg. St. Lawrence County District Attorney Gary Pasqua announced Monday he's launched an investigation into the academy at Ivy Ridge. Pasqua said he's received a flood of complaints alleging abuse at the school. He urged the public to be patient while his office investigates the claims and not to harass people who worked at the school.
I understand that when allegations of this nature come forward, especially in a documentary like this, that includes documents and video and things of that nature, it's going to elicit a reaction in people.
The documentary called The Program, Cons, Cults, and Kidnappings dropped last week on Netflix. It alleges students at Ivy Ridge suffered mental, physical, and sexual abuse. The state attorney general fined the school in 2005 after a student riot. A letter acquired by WWNY-TV shows the State Department of Education had academic, health, and safety concerns about the school in 2006, but Ivy Ridge didn't close until 2009. St. Lawrence County DA Gary Pasqua also urged the public not to trespass on the Ivy Ridge property.
Some state lawmakers want to take health insurance companies out of the business of providing home health care. They say it's a failed experiment that's costing the state too much money. The companies say they provide vital services. Karen DeWitt reports.
When New York reformed its Medicaid program in 2011, it allowed health insurance companies to begin managing home health care. Now, 13 years later, the chair of the Senate Health Committee, Gustavo Rivera, says it has cost the state billions of dollars in unnecessary administrative costs and profits to the insurance companies. He says it needs to end.
It is a failed experiment. Just over the last 4 years alone, over $6 billion have gone into the pockets of insurance companies as opposed to the pockets of workers who provide care or to the care of people that are the long-term care patients. So the bill would do away with managed long-term care plans and switch back to a fee-for-service model that would be managed by the state.
Senator Rivera says the bill, which is sponsored in the Assembly by Health Committee Chair Amy Paulin, would involve a transition period to minimize any disruptions. The managed long-term care plans, or MLTCs, are fighting back. They're asking home care agencies they contract with to send form letters to lawmakers stating their opposition. Alicia Leibel Kenyon is executive director of Elderwood Health Plan in Buffalo. It works with licensed home health care agencies to provide care for vulnerable adults. She says the MLTCs, by assigning recipients a care manager, provide help that goes beyond home health care. That could include physical therapy or free or subsidized meals or other services that she says are the social determinants of health.
Food security. Housing stability. Are they going to have their electric turned off? And this generation, the older generation, they have a lot of pride. They don't always want to share that they're hungry. They don't want to share that they don't have enough food in their fridge. Our social workers gain their trust.
Leibel Kenyon says she can't speak to the money that insurance companies charge for the services or how much the state pays the MLTCs, but she says the home care workers must be paid at least minimum wage according to state law. Leibel Kenyon also took a shot at state lawmakers who backed the bill to end MLTCs.
Is every couple of years you have politicians who come out and they really want to make a mark. They want to put their name on something. So what they do is they put forward these proposals that really do cause a massive disruption to our community. And I'm not saying that they're doing it with ill intention, but I don't think that they have the full knowledge of what it is that what they're doing and the negative impact that it's going to have.
Senator Rivera responds.
That is a very good theory. However, it ignores the fact that I didn't just get here. I have been here for 14 years. I've been the chair of the health committee for six. And I have been pretty consistent throughout my entire career going back 14 years and even before I was a senator in that we should be investing in systems and not in corporate profit.
The bill comes at a time when Governor Kathy Hochul has proposed slashing $1.2 billion from a popular home health care program known as consumer-directed care. That program allows people with disabilities to hire their own home care workers and have more control over how it's managed. Rivera says he's perplexed by those cuts and that the Senate and Assembly budget plans restore the money. Usage of the consumer-directed care program has increased greatly in the past few years. Rivera says ending the health insurance company's involvement in MLTCs would save $1 to $2 billion a year and help pay for that program. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
A Franklin County jury found a man guilty of kidnapping and attempted murder last week. According to the Watertown Daily Times, 56-year-old Thomas Wood of Constable beat and strangled a woman last May. He also tried to get her family to pay a $1,000 ransom. County District Attorney Elizabeth Crawford said the guilty verdict brings justice to the victim, who's still dealing with injuries and trauma from the incident. The Times reports Wood was sent to the Franklin County Jail without bail. He faces up to 25 years to life in prison at his sentencing in May.
And the Public Health Department in St. Lawrence County will give away COVID tests and tick removal kits today. The distribution event will take place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at St. Lawrence University's Lighthead Fieldhouse in Canton. Public health workers will give out one at-home COVID test and one tick removal kit per person while supplies last. No registration is required, and the event is open to the public.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Northern Lights right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, we'll catch up with the founder of the North Country's Empire Baseball League. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note, how to create bird habitat at home with native plants. That's coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Mix of sun and clouds today, highs in the 50s, maybe a high near 60 in places like Lake George, Glens Falls, light winds out of the west, light snow or rain, depending on how cold it gets overnight tonight, temperatures dipping down into the 30s and 40s, and then tomorrow, probably rain showers with highs in the 40s on Friday, about a 70% chance of precipitation on Friday. Saturday, a little cooler, highs low 40s with mostly cloudy skies. And then Sunday and Monday, again, a mix of maybe some rain or sleet, a high in the low 40s on Sunday, highs 30s on Monday, highs in the 20s next Tuesday. So just a bit of a cool off as we head into the early part of next week. Right now in Canton, mostly cloudy skies, 34 degrees.
It is springtime, the start of baseball season. Spring training is underway, and not just for the pros, but also our teams here in the North Country. Since 2015, the Tiny Empire League has trained guys out of college to try out for Major League Farm teams. Right now, they're in California and Florida getting ready for the season. And they've got a team near you, the Tupper Lake River Pigs, the Saranac Surge, the Malone Border Hounds, who are the reigning champs from last year, the Plattsburgh Thunderbirds, and an international team, the Japan Islanders. I recently caught up with the league founder, Eddie Gonzalez.
So right now, you know, Major League Baseball is going through what's called like spring training. So we kind of do something similar where this is like where they're doing, you know, getting themselves in really good shape and trying to get themselves better prepared for to be selected and participate in a summer season somewhere. They're all trying it. The various leagues that are out there. And so for our league, the players are being evaluated right now, and this is where we determine, you know, who gets put on the teams. We do like a selection draft, and that's how they know.
You're touching on it there, but who are these guys? Probably not guys that, you know, went to high school and college like in Miami and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so what we're trying to do is kind of provide a dream opportunity for that underdog player. We're here to help that Division II, Division III out of the big populated scouted regions. So we're trying to kind of give more of an opportunity to guys that go overlooked a little bit, that, you know, weren't probably dealt the best hand, meaning, you know, they're not in the most popular colleges and universities or the colleges that don't get all the scouting. So, you know, if you're in the South, in Miami or Texas, you know, every high school and college baseball program has scouts looking at their players, but if you get into the North, you know, unless you have a really, really, really standout player, it's really difficult for scouting to find out that those players are there and they're good. So we're kind of there to kind of open that door for those guys. You know, our platform is to help them make a decision. Do they want to pursue a pro career? We kind of help either launch them into baseball, or they kind of realize, all right, it's not for me, and I'm ready to go, you know, be an accountant somewhere. You know, it's, you know, we're the little guys. So we just want to help them try to take a step towards the direction of making it, you know, big. And one of the good examples is like Alex Rodriguez went to like SUNY Canton, you know, whose family, they still have like a batting training academy up in the area and up there in New York. They're just so proud of to have a local kid who now is entering his third, I believe, or if not fourth spring going with the Minnesota Twins baseball organization. So it's like a dream come true that this kid that would have not had a chance otherwise, nowhere else, comes to play with us and ends up, you know, when I got the call looking for a catcher, I said I got the greatest young kid available with the right age and right out of college, and he's young and he can grow. And so he's been there for 2 or 3 years now.
That's awesome. You must feel so proud of him.
Yeah, it is. It's something definitely that's just like, wow, you just never know. You know, you hope to help one guy at a miracle, one out of a thousand. And the fact that we've helped hundreds achieve opportunities and at least 10 get, you know, and just in the last few years alone, we've helped about 10 guys get, you know, an affiliate organization opportunity. It just shows that the program does help. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it no more. This league would have ended years ago if we knew that it couldn't help nobody. That's kind of what keeps it going for us.
Well, in did you play professional ball yourself?
Yes. Obviously, I played, you know, my whole life since I was 6 years old. My dad had me in baseball, and then I went to college on a scholarship and down in Florida. And after I was done with college, my 4 years, I had interest from various major league organizations like the San Diego Padres and the Florida Marlins and the Cincinnati Reds. And I would get invited to these training camps on these various teams. And I, you know, for whatever reason here or there, I couldn't roster the big teams, you know, with the big clubs. And so, but thanks to those camps and being in pro baseball and scouted, I got put in one of the MLB partner leagues, you know, which is like a minor league. These are the minor leagues that are partnered with MLB right now. And I got to play, you know, for approximately 8 years or so. And now, you know, once I got into the coaching side of it, this just to stay in the game is, you know, why I'm here now.
Do you have a favorite game that you've seen or a favorite play or something that like, yeah.
Yeah. I do have a good memory. I was watching, I believe, the Toronto Blue Jays play. Is it the Blue Jays or the Dodgers? I don't know if it was the Blue Jays or the Dodgers. We're playing the Cardinals, and there was a play at the plate, and I happened to be there sitting, like, field level, and I saw the runner jump over the catcher to score. So that was a pretty good one. But I do, as far as, like, a memorable game, I go way back when the Diamondbacks beat the New York Yankees with Alex Gonzalez hitting a base hit to win the title. I think that was a pretty memorable game for me in my childhood. But, you know, when you do this for a living, you kind of lose the factor of being individualized. A fan of a team, I'm just such a fan of the game. I love all the teams. I love watching kids make it to various teams and I kind of lose that. I'm not a fan of one or the other. Growing up, I was a Braves fan.
What is it about the sport, do you think, for you that, like, really does it?
I wish I knew. I mean, I loved the game as a kid, and that's all I knew. And so if I was to stop now, I don't know what I would do. You know, I don't know what I would do. I'd go mow lawns or sports is what I love. It's what I have a passion for.
That was Eddie Gonzalez, founder and director of the Empire Baseball League. The season starts in early June. We're going out on a little bit of music from Sophistafunk. This Syracuse-based group has performed in Saranac Lake and throughout upstate New York. And this Friday, they're coming to Saratoga Springs to play at Putnam Place. This is their song, MC.
We've been around since before the nativity, back in antiquity, ancient history, the Sibylline prophecy, the Eleusinian mystery, way back to the oracle at Delphi. We don't expire, we don't even have a shelf life. We keep multiplying ad infinitum, even though it seems like our number's at a minimum. Just because we ain't on TV or the radio doesn't mean that we ain't everywhere. We've been laying low, we've been hiding in the shadows like King Tut's tomb in the valley of the pharaohs. You can find us at a coffee shop or open mic or on the subway writing rhymes we hope the locals like. You'll never know you're nice until you try it out. MCs, turn it up, the time is now. Life ain't always what it seems to be. MC, what it means to me. It's the way you live when you're feeling free. MC, what it means to me. And no one ever said it come easily. MC, what it means to me. To vibrate at high frequencies. This is what it means to me. In my sleeping life, in my waking dreams, I know nothing's quite like the way it seems. I waited patiently, and now I'm breaking free. I trace my history to Brooklyn and Jamaica, Queens. I got Jacob's genes, plus I'm my father's son. I got so far to run to get back where I started from. My family came from places like the Virgin Islands. I guess the universe occurs in perfect timing. Verbal silence taught me not to be a person climbing. Up the mountaintop, about to drop in search of diamonds. I heard the sirens, but I woke up to disturbing silence. It burned like turpentine. I opened up these Virgin Islands. Took off my shirt and tie and realized that I was safe. I'm wide awake now, flying on a higher plane. And all it starts with a minor change. Then watch it swell up like a tidal wave.
Life ain't always what it seems to be. MC, what it means to me.
Sophistafunk, that is their song MC. They're performing tomorrow night at Putnam Place in Saratoga Springs along with the band Cool Cool Cool. The doors open at 8, shows at 9. Ages 18 and older. Tickets are $20 ahead of time, $25 at the door. And you can find out more at putnamplace.com. That's it for the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then after that, it's the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock. I'm Monica Sandreski.
I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Before you sell a million.